I guess we're live. Okay, so hi, welcome to the double feature tonight. It is the triple feature under ordinary circumstances, but Joe is stuck in traffic. So tonight, Tom and I, say hi, Tom.
Hello.
Tom and I are going to be talking about this movie. Wow, that does not reproduce well.
Oh, nice. Wait, is this off your, what is that, off your iPad?
Okay, okay. So we're going to be talking about Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier, or Captain America, The Winter Soldier. I guess there's no 2 in it.
Yeah.
And also the G. Willow Wilson and Adrian Alfona comic Ms. Marvel, starring the all-new Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan. And we might be able to fit in some time to talk about the French zombie, not really zombie, the French dead people drama.
Sure.
The Returned. We'll see if we can get some chatter in about that towards the end. So Captain America 2.
Yes.
Tom, you're wearing appropriate.
I'm that guy. Yeah. I'm the guy who wears the band shirt to the concert. That's me. Yeah. Winter Soldier, I saw it a couple weeks ago. This is like a movie that I actually managed to get out and see within like a timely fashion. Right. Definitely under the gun with its tie into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., who I'm going to totally take you to the woodshed on now, because I know that you like it. So, but that's neither here nor there. We'll come back to that.
Yeah,
I saw it just after the weekend, and I'm trying to kind of collect my thoughts on it, but the thing that really kind of that I've walked away with feeling was, do I like Captain America more than Iron Man now? It was a very confusing time for me. I was very upset. I did a lot of heavy drinking. But no, it's such a fantastic movie, and it basically makes the Iron Man sequels just look like total shit. So kudos to the creative team on Winter Soldier. They did a fantastic job. And the other thing I came to kind of appreciate about it is, when the first Captain America movie came out, I watched it and was like, it's good, it's fine, it's a little hokey, you know, it's a little... Chris Evans is a little gee whiz for me. But since the Avengers and since the Winter Soldier, if you go back and watch the first Avenger, it becomes retroactively a much better movie, and it's very interesting to see how that works. So, I think it's the clearest example yet of what Marvel is doing. Well, maybe not the clearest example yet. Avengers is a pretty clear example of their universe building. But in Phase 2... they've got it locked down tight. References to the first movie, references to the Avengers, all are very consistent in tone and in detail. They know that their audience is going to be looking for things to kind of punch holes in. There's a lot of little, you know, tip of the hat to the fanboys, basically. References to characters that aren't explicitly explained, or not explicitly named, I guess would be a better way to put it.
You're talking about... what's the guy in the
bunker?
Huh?
In the bunker? Or
the very first.
Oh, Batroc.
Batroc, right.
Well, they put him in there, and they have him in his colors, with purple and like canary yellow. Heh. You know, and look, he's like a parkour fighter. You know, so
French kickboxer.
French kickboxer. What I liked about that is that Captain America just matches him.
Belgian or something like that. So he really should have been just Jean-Claude Van Damme. But, he was perfectly cast. He's not in it a whole lot. He really functions as that kind of Bond villain before the credits.
Yeah. Well, you know what I was thinking too is like they crammed so many of like Captain America's kind of rogues gallery in there. And if you were only looking at like screen captures or trailers or anything like that, you would think that it was going to suffer a little bit from, you know, too many villain syndrome,
right.
And it doesn't. They're just little touches as they go. It's not going to be Spider-Man 2, where everyone is just the kitchen sink. I have a bad vibe.
We don't know that yet.
We don't know, but I got a bad vibe going into
the the reviews have not been kind.
Yeah. I mean, the best thing about it right now is the costume.
Yeah. I think Amazing, not to get off the subject, but I think Amazing Spider-Man 2 has the best Spider-Man costume we've seen to date.
Yep.
In film, I'm so excited about that. I just wish the movie would be good. But
yeah. Anyway, we'll review that later. Yeah.
I have to totally agree with you about Captain America 2. I was not a massive fan of the first one. It was all right. It was not my favorite of the early Marvel movies. I have not seen Iron Man 3 yet.
Yeah.
I'm gonna Redbox that, I guess, soon. It'll be my first Redbox movie.
There you go. Be an interesting one to start with, I guess.
But I honestly would say that Captain America 2 is my favorite Marvel movie other than The Avengers. And I'd kind of have to, like, compare the two, like, see them, little taste test action, one after another, to get any more detail than that. But Captain America 2 really takes not only the Captain America series, if a two-movie series can be called a series at this point, but also the Marvel movies in a completely different direction than they've been.
Yeah.
I really like the fact that there's so many spoilers in this movie, and
where do you go?
Yeah.
There's a massive status quo change.
Right. There is a massive status quo change, and I think that it will make superhero fans optimistic.
Yes.
Because to date, the Shield has been factored really heavily into it, and I think where they're going with this is they're going to be kind of de-emphasizing Shield in the Avengers movie. Not that Shield's going to go away. It's still going to be part of the Marvel Universe, I believe. Obviously, Agents of Shield is still around in some fashion. So how exactly Agents of Shield is going to continue that legacy, or if Nick Fury is going to continue that legacy, or Black Widow, whatever, you know.
Yeah. I think what's going to be really interesting about, I mean, the movie universe has parallels to the television. Well, it's a shared universe. Right. What the TV show now has is a purpose, where before it was like wacky science thing of the week.
Yeah.
And you just go, all right, great, fine. They found something that flips around gravity. Now what's next?
Right.
Now there's like a larger narrative within that show. Right. So that gives something for that TV show to do. Right. Great. Go, take that, run with it.
Right.
Help us figure out how that all shakes out. Meanwhile, superheroes in the movies, the focus is so focused, it's going to be on them. And, if you read online, and like in the solo movies, people go like, well, why didn't like Captain America come help Iron Man beat up all these other guys? And you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot, they're peeling some of that away. To go like, yeah, we have a built-up universe, but now this is like standalone adventure stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? A really hard reboot, I guess. And we've not even been in the Marvel universe for, what, 6 years? Since 2008?
Right. They're definitely setting some things up. And Captain America 2 definitely pushes that story forward in a way that Thor: The Dark World did not.
Yeah.
In any shape or form. And that's one of the things that I found really frustrating about it. And actually, since you brought up Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's one of the things that I found really frustrating with that series is nothing happened. I understand that because so much is tied in with Captain America 2, they couldn't have a lot of things happen up until now. But that doesn't mean that nothing had to happen.
Yeah.
They really dropped the ball on making the stories that they were telling interesting, and I do think they could have made what they were doing much more interesting. Joss Whedon is a good enough writer. He's worked with good enough writers on his other TV shows.
Yeah.
So there's really no excuse for it being as boring as it was. But, you know, to its credit, in the last couple of episodes, it's gotten pretty good. And I hope that's, you know, a sign of things to come. I'm enjoying it. I'm actually not kind of thinking of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as a chore anymore. Yeah. I'm not skipping episodes anymore either, because it's these last two have been a complete game changer for that show. It's fun. It's even made Agent Ward, the most boring character on the show, really kind of interesting. I kind of like that.
What I like about it too is that it kind of took the cuddly edge off of Coulson. Mm-hmm. Now he's like hard-boiled Coulson. He wants the facts, you know. Like, they made him somebody to contend with again, which is nice. I mean, he was always good for comedic relief in the films, but that's not a guy you want to hang out with in a show for an hour. Mm-hmm. The other thing I'd point out too about Captain America, and actually, well, the larger Marvel universe, is that you consider that on the slate this year is Winter Soldier and then Guardians of the Galaxy in August, which are like two wildly divergent films, that you're basically just going like, we so drastically changed the universe that you know, we're going to take you into outer space to give you time to like process it. Right. Like, we're going to distract you with these guys over here.
Love it.
You know, really pretty clever.
There is, I don't think it's a spoiler to say it, there is a tiny mention of Stephen Strange in it, and in Captain America 2, and
exactly
how it comes out, it's too complicated to explain. It's not even really a spoiler, but he gets mentioned, so he exists, and I think that is, you know, something that could, you know, open up the Marvel Cinematic Universe into a much more superheroic area than we've ever seen before.
Yeah. Well, when you consider, I mean, it's so interesting too when you think about the Marvel's larger strategy and what they've done up to this point, aside from Thor, has made it kind of very grounded within like a government framework. So S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of a synonym for the government, although it's not the government, but it is. And then Thor is this kind of like weird alien extra digit over here. And now we're going into space, and now there's this, you know, magic is now potentially something that could enter into the universe. Then meanwhile, shunted off into Netflix land, you've got their street-level heroes, Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, and can't remember the fourth. I wish it was Moon Knight, but it's not. But you know what I mean? So they've got like these weird layers mm-hmm. on top of each other. And how are you gonna keep that straight for audiences? So far, it's working out.
One of the things I think is going to be really interesting with the Netflix series, they are going to be sequential. There's going to be, you know, a series of one, a series of the next, a series of the next, four series I think, and then Defenders, right?
Yeah. Who's the fourth?
If I understand, the individual series are going to be 12 episodes each, and then the Defenders is going to be 6 episodes.
Yeah.
So they'll probably actually spend about the same amount of money on all of them and just make the Defenders fucking awesome. I'm really excited about that because that is one of those things where they don't need to tie it in with the rest of the universe. They don't need to have cameos
on
them. They don't even need to mention S.H.I.E.L.D. Or whatever. They probably will. Who knows? But they don't have to because those characters are in a completely different plane of existence.
Than
the Avengers are. And even though Captain America is obviously not powered, although he's pretty kick-ass in this movie.
Yeah.
To get back to Winter Soldier, one of the things that I really liked about it was, the two major things that I liked about it were the action. The action was better than any Marvel superhero movie. It's some of the best action I've seen in a movie in years. It's just a lot of fun. And, you know, Captain America, Black Widow, Winter Soldier, all of them are, like, throwing down in these fights, Batroc, too, where there's some real weight to the punches. There's times where you're like, I mean, you know Captain America's not going to bite it, but you're like, he's in the
middle here. Yeah, you're kind of, well... Yeah, that was. I have to agree on the action sequences. The amount of variety in the film is astonishing, mm-hmm. and it's not just all CG explosion bullshit. It's hand to hand, fast paced, mm-hmm. action. Really clever set pieces. The whole thing in the elevator with the 10 guys that kind of come file in, yep. and he takes apart a crew that size in a space, you know, this big.
Right.
The knife fight with the Winter Soldier right. was amazing. What's his name? Sebastian Shaw. If that was him, I don't know. If it's whoever is the guy that's flipping the knife and going from hand to hand like that, like, right. I've never seen anything like that in a movie. It was and it went by so quickly. I was like, what did I just watch? I would go back again just to watch the action sequences. They're really that good.
Seeing it a second time as well. I'd like to do it in theaters, but I don't have time before the summer. Considering yeah. it's still the number one movie in the country, it's hanging on. I think there's a pretty good chance it'll be in theaters in a month when I'm finally done with the semester. But yeah, it is a great, great testament to Anthony and Joe Russo, whose previous credits are a bunch of TV series, Community for one,
yeah.
As directors, not so much writers, but also
Christopher Development
Feely worked on the script, which is really interesting because they're, I think, involved, if I'm remembering this correctly, they're also the writers of Thor 2, which I don't know what was wrong with that movie exactly. To me, Thor 2, the villain, was just not interesting. It didn't connect. It didn't add anything. Whereas I think in Captain America, it really tied with the first movie as well as the Avengers and where we're headed in the MCU. And so it felt like it mattered in a way that Thor didn't.
Well, you know what I wonder what's going to happen mm-hmm. is if after Guardians of the Galaxy, Thor 2 is going to start to make a whole lot more sense. Just kind of like how the first Captain America was like, eh, you know, now you watch it again and you're like, oh, okay, they laid down some very important pieces in that. So here's my thought, because like people complain that Iron Man 2 basically existed to set up the Avengers. Oh, here's Nick Fury, here's Black Widow, you know. I think Thor 2 is laying the groundwork for the cosmic stuff, because everything about it was about the Aether, which is basically revealed to be one of the other Infinity Stones equal to the Tesseract. Mm-hmm. That's what I think it was. It was just a lot of narrative blah to get us to that last piece, which is like, oh, there's a cosmic element here, and this will be addressed a year from now in Guardians of the Galaxy. I really think that's where it's going.
That actually makes a lot of sense to me. I don't think it'll make it a better movie.
No.
Rewatching. But, you know.
The best thing that Thor 2 had going for it is that it was funnier than the first.
It was. The best parts of Thor 2 were better than in anything in Thor 1, but the worst parts of it were it's almost worse than being bad. It was boring.
Yeah.
It was just,
there's not much in that movie that I remember, right. Which is an unfortunate thing.
Anyway, Captain America 2, highest recommendation I can give for seeing it in a theater. It was just a ton of fun.
Can I say one thing really quick? Sure. Anthony Mackie as the Falcon.
Oh, I can't believe we didn't talk about him. Let's talk about him.
Aces. I loved it. Had the right attitude. Mm-hmm. Made me believe in the character. I never once questioned the big wing suit, which is grossly impractical for all reasons. You're thinking, like, where did it come from? Who designed it? Is this a Stark thing? Why doesn't he just give them suits? Like, there could be a million questions in your head that go over that thing, but then you're like, oh, no, he's like this advanced paratrooper. It all makes sense. Somehow it congeals at the end where they're like, got my wings, and he takes off and looks believable.
Loved it.
Shooting Uzis at, like, giant ships. Like,
yeah, Anthony Mackie has been one of the most charismatic actors in Hollywood for years. He was great in Hurt Locker. He was great in Pain and Gain. Yes, I mentioned a Michael Bay movie positively. He's just a lot of fun to watch. And I really look for. I mean, he is clearly going to be in Captain America 3.
Yeah.
and I am looking forward to it because
I'd be a little sad if he doesn't poke his head in the Avengers.
I don't think he will, but maybe they'll try to work something in, based on how much how much they liked him.
Yeah,
even if it's just like a one shot cameo, that would be cool.
That would be something I'd like to see, is how they've done these one shot movies after the fact. So they gave like Agent Carter a movie, they gave the Mandarin a movie. Give Anthony Mackie a one shot at least.
Oh, that would be great.
He would be highly entertaining to watch. The greatest thing about Captain America, the sequel, is really within the first 5 minutes, where this isn't spoilery, but they're basically just showing the National Mall, and Anthony Mackie's out jogging, and here comes Captain America on your left, and he runs past him, right? Uh-huh. And then, like, you know, more credits come up, and they're still running on your left. And he laughs him again. He like laughs him like 5 times, and then at the very end, he's like, he hears him coming up behind him, and he's like, "No, don't you say it! Don't you say it on your left! No, come on!" That was the best, and it told you really right away kind of where the heart of the movie was, and where that relationship, how that became kind of legitimate. So, yeah, in terms of, I don't know, sidekicks, I don't want to. That seems like a lame thing to throw on top of it, but really felt like a very natural relationship between Mackie and Chris Evans, and they did a fantastic job of that.
Yeah, yeah. So the effusive praise for Captain America. Let's talk briefly about Ms. Marvel. I know this is a series both of us have read for the since it started, I think, right?
Yes.
But yeah, Ms. Marvel, my low-tech, my high-tech, low-tech way of getting
it. Printed it out, I guess.
So Ms. Marvel is a dramatic reinvention of the character. It centers on a Muslim-American teenage girl, Kamala Khan, who at this point in the series has just gotten superpowers, but hasn't really become the Ms. Marvel that we've already seen on the covers, which is interesting.
She hasn't put on the costume that she's been shown in previews or anything yet.
Right. On the cover of the newest issue, number 3, they do show, you know, what she's going to look like. Nope, wrong one. That was 2. Yeah. Okay, that's not gonna work. Anyway, so the third issue, you get a good look at her costume, but she's still, I mean, and she has, without being too obtuse about it, she has shapeshifting ish powers, and so she's appeared as Ms. Marvel, but it's been Carol Danvers.
Yeah, the Carol Danvers version. She has, well, that's the thing. It's like there's a legitimate group out there that are, I can't remember the names, but they're Ms. Marvel fans. Mm-hmm. So they go out, they dress like her, they do the conventions, and you know, there's basically like this this real world groundswell support for that character, mm-hmm. which I kind of wasn't aware of. Kamala Khan in the book is basically of that fandom, mm-hmm. and when she gets her powers, which is a result of the Infinity crossover, or not Infinity, can't remember the name of it now.
I don't
know. There was a crossover, it involved the Inhumans. It wasn't Infinity.
It was some fog.
Right. This ties into, like, the last crossover. Inhumanity was basically the Inhuman city was floating above New York, and they blew it up, of course. Mm-hmm. And Terrigen Mists basically filtered all over the world, and anybody who had that had DNA, like their ancestors, developed superpowers from that. She's one of them. It's really, honestly, the best thing to come out of that turd burglar of a story. So, it's really well done. And what I like about it is that, I don't want to step on what you're saying, I'm sorry, but...
So what I was saying, I don't know G. Willow Wilson's stuff. I can't, if I have read anything by her, I don't know. Adrian Alfona is probably best known for drawing the Runaways series. He was the original artist on that, co-creator with Brian Vaughn. And And he was good then, but his art has evolved a good deal.
It's kind of noodly, which I like.
And I love it. I love it. It's something that you don't often see in superhero comics or mainstream comics that for that matter. But like, I mean, like it's weird because like the only thing I can even only person I can think to compare him to is the guy who does the Oz comics right now.
Oh, Scotty Young.
Scotty Young, yeah. Except obviously much more grounded in like reality. But it's
well. Kind of his, Young is all about, like, kind of explosive expression.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Okay, maybe it's a poor comparison. They're
well,
very...
Well, I see what you're saying. I mean, it has that kind of, like, that loose, sketchy style.
Right, yeah. Right. It's, I mean, he's definitely much more representative than Scotty Young's stuff. Scotty yes. Young is, you know, very, you know, graffiti-inspired and stuff like that.
Cartoony.
For like, yeah. I mean, it's kind of...
I'm not trying to diminish it. I'm just... What's close?
Right. No, I know what you mean. Like I said, it's maybe not the greatest comparison, but it's the only one that really came to mind. But his art has evolved, and I think is really exciting now. And so between that and the fact that Kamala Khan is just a really likable kind of every girl sort of character, plus you know the surrounding characters that obviously they're going to get into. Are fairly interesting. You know, it really kind of, in some ways, reminds me of the early issues of Static in the Milestone universe, because it was kind of setting up this teenage superhero with kind of, you know, the world around them and doing it in a way that shows how it's different than the other times you've seen that, Peter Parker, blah, blah, blah. But without kind of beating you over the head with, like, this is the Muslim American teenage girl version of this sort of teenage superhero story, you know? It feels very organic. It doesn't feel like some, you know, like an artificial construct that they're trying to just, hey, let's make a Muslim American superhero.
Yeah. The thing I like about it is that Marvel, for years and years, had the teenage superhero template down pat, and it brought him huge success and great. Anymore though, it feels like within the comics, stakes are always so high, and they're rolling from one crossover event into the other. And I get why they do that, and I understand why it's important from a business perspective. What I appreciate though is that they're still making room for smaller books like Ms. Marvel, which focuses on one character and their personal circumstances and executes it very, very well.
Right.
I immediately care about the main character. I'm already familiar with the supporting characters. They feel like real people. Mm-hmm. And honestly, they're showing me they're showing me a part of the world that I don't really have a lot of exposure to, Muslim Americans and what they contend with. And what they do is that they don't politicize it. They don't sensationalize it. They just open a window into their culture, and as much as you can do in 22 pages every month, like,
right.
You know, but it's different, it's unique, and I'm glad that they're exploring something like that. I hope they stretch it out as long as they can. I think it really should be, the whole thing should be about discovery for her. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see the new Ms. Marvel jumping straight into action all the time. You know, I don't want to see her, like, going, oh, my gosh, my superhero, you know, my mentors, the people I've looked up to for so long, I'm finding beside them, I can't believe it. No, keep it within
right.
The neighborhood.
That cliche stuff that it just gets really, like, because that stuff is really exciting for those characters.
Right.
And even for, you know, for readers of those characters, I mean, there's this big rush to get to that.
Well, it'll boost a book, honestly. If you put Spider-Man in there, you put Wolverine in there, then people go, I like Spider-Man, and then I pick up a book.
Right.
I get it. But
hopefully the fact that, from what I understand, Ms. Marvel is doing really well in sales.
Yeah.
I hope that will kind of keep them, you know, conservative about how quickly they start. And not integrating her into the Marvel Universe, but, you know, kind of shoehorning those guys into her series, or her into those like big crossovers.
Yeah.
Because at this point, she certainly feels like it'd be out of place.
I really want, well, that's the other thing that Marvel has always done well, is that they've given their characters outsider status, and that's happening less and less within the books as well, because now everybody's an Avenger. The last like few Avengers storylines have been about how they're literally making the planet an Avengers world. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, well, okay, that's fine. If you like the big adventure stuff and you want to see all those people together, that's fine. But what's going on in this pocket, in this pocket, in this pocket? So a book like Ms. Marvel kind of scratches that itch. Similarly, and I don't want to get off track, but the new Ghost Rider that they've introduced,
okay,
two issues in, and I really like it. And it's because I feel like it's doing something that's parallel to what Ms. Marvel is doing. It's showing us, you know, a different facet of our own culture that we don't always see represented, and I don't feel that it's patronizing. I don't feel like they're just kind of slapping religion or ethnicity into it and saying, like, oh, look, it's a brand new thing. No, I mean, it feels organic. So I'm more willing to give books like this a try. Another similarity, the artwork on the new Ghost Rider, and the name of the artist right now is escaping me, is vastly different from what you see. Very kind of manga influenced. Mm-hmm. So they're just doing different things in small doses, and so I think that's worth celebrating,
right,
especially mainstream comics owned by Disney. You know, like, it's a big deal. It's a big deal.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, Ms. Marvel, there's not a lot to talk about because it's only three issues out so far, but there are three really fun issues, and I think that anybody who's interested in superhero comics should get in on the ground floor of this series, because it deserves to be allowed to grow as organically as it can.
Right. I would say definitely try and get the three issues now if you can. Don't wait for trade. I think that's the reflex that some people go to, where they're like, oh, yeah, I don't want to add another book. I'll just wait for the trade and decide if I like it then. Just buy it. Just get the books now, because it will sustain it longer than I think trades will.
Okay, so I don't know how much we can talk about this last part, but what we wanted to talk about was the French supernatural dramatic television series, Les Revenants. We can call it The Returned, because that's what they're calling it on Netflix. But in the series, it's a 8-issue series on Netflix now, that is about a small town in France where some dead people pop back up, and they're not zombies. They are they died in the past. They were buried, or buried, as some people like to call it. And then one day they're back. One of the main characters is a 15-year-old girl who died in a school bus crash, and her alone among the people that died in that crash comes back. And wouldn't you know it, she had a twin sister who has, of course, been alive for the handful of years since then. And so now all of a sudden her twin sister is like 3, 4 years.
I don't
know exactly what the time span was.
Yeah, it's 4.
4 years older than her sister, and her younger sister. And then there are some others. Tom, you've only gotten a couple of episodes in, so let's talk about just kind of the generalities of it before I can talk a little bit about where it kind of goes and my overall impressions of it beyond that. But go for it.
Yeah, I watched the first two episodes back to back, and it really kind of it tweaked me. In a good way. It's just, I have low tolerance for creepy. Well, that's not true. I like creepy. I don't like gore. This doesn't have a lot of gore. That's fine. It sets a mood, though, that really, really sticks with you. And Mogwai did the soundtrack for it, or I guess the score, or the music. Just did the music for it. And that's the most... What's that?
I guess it counts as a soundtrack. It's a score anyway, but yeah.
And that's the thing that has been the most unsettling for me, because there's lots of quiet spaces, mm-hmm, where characters who are interacting with each other are just kind of trying to size each other up a little bit and try and figure out what's going on and why are you back and what's this. And yeah, so the mood is very affecting. The location is very affecting. It's very isolated. It's modern, but it's isolated. Mm-hmm. Was somewhere in the French Alps, it looks like.
Something like that.
I don't know where exactly.
Inside.
So. But really, really interesting. Very well filmed and directed. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I had a problem with it was is that it made me very impatient. I suppose that's a testament to how fast it hooked me. Mm-hmm. But also faced with kind of the deadline of our show tonight, I was just kind of like, I'm gonna go ahead and find out what happened. Like I totally skipped to the end. You know, I was like, it's like reading Agatha Christie backwards. Like, just go, well, I'll just figure out what happened. I think I'll still go back and watch it, even though I have a general sense of what happened. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's been ruined for me, but
I don't see why it would be.
Yeah.
You know, in one of the early apprehensions I had about the show, one of the people that comes back he was a sort of a serial killer. And I found that arc immediately uninteresting. I find serial killers kind of in general a really uninteresting genre. And I was like, oh God, is that where they're going with this? And surprisingly, they actually took it in a fairly interesting direction. They make a couple of missteps in the middle of the series, really towards the end. But for the most part, it does stay really interesting and really creepy for the whole series.
Yeah.
And the returns, the other dead people, all kind of start interacting with each other to some extent. I won't get into spoilers for the seventh and eighth episodes, but I initially found it kind of disappointing, but then I read about the fact that it had been relatively popular, and they actually are planning to do a second series. And in light of the fact that it wasn't conceived as the ending, I can see how it could work, and I'm interested where they're going to go with it. When I went in and originally thought that that was actually the end of the story, I was like, wait, they didn't answer enough. And I'm not, you know, I've said this many times, I'm not super into plot. I don't think that they need to explain why or how, you know, the returned came back. Not completely anyway, but I do think some why, if not how.
I think it needs some how, because several people talk about, like, I went to your funeral, I saw your body in the casket. Mm-hmm. Okay, 4 years on, you're back, you haven't aged a day, you don't remember anything, you're really hungry. How? How? Is it biblical? What are we dealing with? Like, it's a difficult spot to put yourself in, because either you explain, well, the very nature of a supernatural story is that it's you can't make sense of it. It doesn't.
Explanation. But yeah, I mean.
Or then it becomes lost, and where they do kind of explain it, and it's really unsatisfactory. Well, that didn't match up with what was in my head at all. Either you kind of got to lay it down at the beginning, or you're screwed later.
And I do think that they have a lot of room to be able to do kind of a religious. Sort of thing, because there's a church at the bottom of the reservoir, and you know, one, it's France, and so they're all probably Catholic.
They have strong feelings about that.
Yeah. So I mean, I think if they do bring in something like that, that's kind of where it's going to head, and that doesn't really bother me. I was just a little disappointed. There wasn't enough why.
Yeah. I had read that they were doing another series, and having read kind of the outlines of the synopsis of the individual episodes, mm-hmm. And I go, okay, well, I read the synopsis, then I see they're doing a second series, and my first thought was like, I wonder if they'll do it like as an anthology, or like, you know, like American Horror Story jumps, kind of jumps genres and locations. I wonder if they would do it that way, but who knows.
I don't think that that's going to be the case here. Although, you know, the longer they wait, the harder they're going to have, harder time that they're going to have with this because, you know, all of a sudden, 15-year-old Camille is going to be almost as old as her sister was at the
And
time.
won't look anything like
They
her.
don't look like twins.
Yeah. Something. Yeah. I don't know. The other thing I was thinking about when I was watching it was the American version of it, which I don't know the name of. It's on ABC right now.
My understanding is that it just has a similar premise, but it's not actually based on the same
No, not based on the same thing, but yeah, similar premise. And I've
resurrection.
heard good things about that. What's it called?
I think it's called Resurrection.
Resurrection. That's right. Well, you know, that's confusing to me because it also makes me think of that terrible NBC show, that Revolution, about apocalypse. Like, Resurrection, Revolution, Return. But I've heard good things about Resurrection and how those characters kind of interact with each other. And apparently, you know, they had relationships before they died. I don't know. I think the biggest thing to take away from The Returned, and this is something I will give credit to you, Gordon, on, is that you find stuff that I would never have looked into, ever. Because, not because I'm like, oh, you know, well, one thing is time, but a French supernatural series, you know, with subtitles on Netflix.
Actually, I have to give Joe credit
How?
for that. Joe,
Oh, Joe, okay.
brought this one up.
Because you had recommended Parker, I think.
Oh, the Parker books, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
That was me.
Well, your streak is broken, McAlpin. All right, credit to Joe then. I would never have looked into this on my own. It's that I think it's kind of an interesting escape away from American television, where you go, okay, well, you know, they're not necessarily doing it all that differently. I mean, you could probably hold this up to something like The Sopranos, or you know, just in terms of the quality,
Sure.
how it's shot and how it's
It's
edited.
definitely a very well shot show. You mentioned Mogwai earlier. One of the actual very minor complaints I have about the series is that the music gets very samey. And I read an article that kind of gave me a clue as to why. Apparently, Mogwai recorded a good chunk of its music, if not all of it, before they'd actually shot the show. So there is kind of a disconnect between what's happening on screen and the music. And they recycle a lot of the music for various sequences, which after the second or third time you've heard a given theme, it's like there's not even the slightest variation on the way that they're using this music, which is a shame because they've got some really creepy stuff. It's good music, but it's just like they don't do enough with it. By letting, you know, Mogwai actually score it as opposed to, you know, taking stuff recorded for the show, but using it as kind of a soundtrack,
Yeah.
instead of a score.
It kind of reminds me of, do you remember in Saving Sarah Marshall, where Jason Segel's character, he writes the music for the kind of Law and Order show that Kristen Bell is on, and they're like, oh, you write the music for that? That's really impressive. He goes, it's not music, it's just ominous tones. Just, oh no, the masturbating dog killer is on the loose again. At least the dogs are happy. Like, it's kind of like that, but within the context of the show, Mogwai's score really does. It worked on me. I don't know.
It did work on me very early on too, but then and
Then you
maybe just
start to
maybe you
notice
wouldn't have
it.
noticed, but over six more episodes,
You
you start
start,
to recognize, oh, this is that piece.
well, it's just kind of like this is atonal electronic drone that like warbles a little bit. So it starts to make you think, like, is there something wrong with my television? But no, yeah. So the first, yeah, I could see where though later on where you're just like kind of like knock it off, play a note.
There's some good melody, melodic parts. But anyway, I did like the series well enough to recommend anybody that's interested in kind of like spooky stories,
Yeah.
to check it out, give it a couple of episodes, and if it does hook you, you know, keep going with the series.
I thought of a thing. Like, if you like the X-Files, These eight episodes would be like before Mulder and Scully show up. You know what I mean? Like, all this crazy crap is happening in our town, and then the FBI shows up.
I keep hoping for I don't know. I think it's an interesting series, and I think it's got a lot of potential for where it could go. It would be really cool if a Mulder and Scully type showed up, somebody to, you know.
Well, but, that would be the way to do the sequel, is that, like, you know, things happen, mm-hmm. and then somebody else has to come in and try and figure it out, and we get a fresh pair of eyes onto the events.
So one thing that we haven't mentioned is the fact that the series is actually based on a movie, and it just occurred to me, maybe I should watch the movie.
They Came Back was a thing.
It'll have an ending, and you know, maybe it could spoil the movie for me, or the series for me.
Yeah. What's the movie? It was called They Came Back, I think.
But you know, it was French, so.
Yeah. Yep. I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry now. I know, IMDb says 3 stars. Originally released in 2004. See, now they're characterizing it as a zombie. But they say, unlike modern zombie films in which the undead characters wish to digest or otherwise harm human characters, the 70 million people who return from the dead and They Came Back are cognitively conscious and healthy, having not suffered any biological damage. They want simply to reintegrate themselves into society. In the French village where the film takes place, the town's population must cope with the social and emotional ramifications of the dead coming back to life. They are not unlike children, having to relearn how to talk and remember.
Hmm. Okay, so that's very
different. That's very existential. That's so French.
It's also very different from this series. But it's, you know, whatever. It's a TV series based on it.
Right. Well, how far down can you go?
I recommend it. I don't know if Tom.
I'm interested in it. When we started redoing the triple feature, and like Helix was the first thing we started with, I keep coming back to that all the time. Would I continue to watch Helix? No. But I would continue to watch The Return? Yes, I would.
There you go. So Captain America, giant thumbs up. Ms. Marvel, big thumbs up. The Returned. Yeah, thumbs up. So
everything's great.
Yeah, good week. So I don't know exactly when the next triple feature is going to be, but either in 2 weeks or a month, we will be back. I know in a month I would really like to talk about Turn, the new Jamie Bell American Revolutionary War spy series. It's
the story behind America's first spy ring, only on AMC. Yeah. I just like that guy's voice. AMC guy.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, previously on The Walking Dead.
Download it from iTunes.
Oh, you gotta watch it on AMC because the guy, the commercials for it. They're like, the story behind America's first spy ring.
Right. Anyway. But anyway, so the triple feature will return, hopefully a little faster than last time. If not, definitely the Patreon backers will get to see me draw things. I'm apparently told that my temper tantrums on Facebook and Twitter mean that I need to draw the Hulk soon. So hopefully I'll get to that too.
Your tantrums are the best part of my day, Gordon. They're always at the top of my feed.
I'm a passionate guy.
Oh, I'll respond to this. Yeah.
And half the time, I really am joking most of the time. I promise. Anyway, thanks very much for watching, everybody. Thanks to my Patreon backers, patrons, for making this possible. And thanks to Tom, but not that fucker Joe.
Oh, let's hope he got out of traffic. This is not a Midwest problem.
But no. And thanks to Tom and Joe, as always, for joining me on the resurrected triple feature. See you when I see you.